Welcome to the 104th episode of the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast. My name is Quizmaster Lee, and for our two-year anniversary episode, as usual, I'm joined by the exquisite Esquire Quizmaster, Mark Davis, for fellowship in trivia. How are you, my friend?
I'm very well. I have my Fellowship of the Ring on and ready to answer some questions. A little self-sussing.
Yeah.
I'm a little worried.
A little head-to-head, one-on-one, mano-e-mano.
Mano-e-mano, yes.
I like manu-e-manu. You know,
I miss
as a
Manu.
Tribute to our friend Manu. Yeah, where's Manu been?
I think he told me that he messaged me. He's like, I don't want you to think that I've been, bonking out on trivia, but I think he said that there are a bunch of people that are like vacationing on the island and sucking up all the internet. Internet's been so terrible that he hasn't even been bothering to try and log in, especially for like, you know, our trivias where timing matters to some extent. So,
well, Manu, if you're listening, you know, we hope you're well and enjoying the podcast. Now, Mark, interesting week for trivia this week. You're back online, right?
Yeah. Someone at Nice Guys, where I do trivia, had tested positive for coronavirus. They've been, over the top as far as making sure, you know, regarding safety measures that everyone's wearing masks, everybody's washing their hands, everybody's wearing gloves. Every time I've been there, everything's been on the up and up. At some point he had gotten it before work or after work or something. And, because he tested positive, they decided it was probably a good idea to close up shop until everybody could get tested and they could, you know, sanitize, you know, the inside of the store, kind of start from scratch. They were basically just waiting on testing, but everyone and their brother is getting tested now because as more and more people come out as having had it, anybody who's been around them wants to get tested, whether they're symptomatic or not. The day after that was it found out that he was positive. Basically everyone at Nice Guys went and got tested and have been waiting for all of their results, you know, so, mm-hmm. I ended up going back to Zoom trivia. I wasn't sure if we were going to do it or not because it was pretty last second. I think Tuesday, they usually closed on Monday anyway. We were just kind of like waiting for results. And then Tuesday, they made the decision, you know, we're not going to open today. We're not going to have enough results by tomorrow. So ended up just doing a tiny Zoom trivia, in which you played and teamed up with Ian.
Yes.
For the no-no squad.
Mm-hmm. The usual suspect himself. He was out Indeed. In the Outer Banks on vacation, actually.
The OBX, mm-hmm. as they call it.
Oh, I didn't know they called it that. The OBX.
I believe that's how it's stylized.
Yeah.
And how did you guys do, Lee?
Well, we started a little slow, and we had a bit of a rally at the end, but it wasn't enough to beat Elise. Elise was by herself and just freaking dominating the quiz, basically. We, as a team, that would be me, Kyle Ian, and Ian, we were the no-no squad. We ended up talking each other out of like a few correct answers, and we might have won, I think, if we didn't. But I think that's very interesting, like Elise having an unclouded mind, you know, nobody second guessing her guesses and having the knowledge in the first place, obviously.
Right.
You know, maybe there's some wisdom there to the going solo like Seth did. What was Seth's score again?
Seth's score at the end was -2.
-2. Okay. So Elise had same approach, but drastically different results.
63 points.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So Elise had 63. I think we were in the upper 40s. Is that right?
That is correct. You had 49 points and your last round, you only missed two questions. Elise missed three, but the only two questions aside from the wager question, she got right were the 3 and 4 points, so the two easiest. Wow. You guys didn't get the 4 point question right, but you did get the 7 point question and the 5 point question. So, I mean, you knew the harder stuff.
Yeah, the ones that we didn't know, the first was the royal subject question that you had.
Right. Yeah, the question was... What royal subject married Amenhotep the IV?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Kyle said instantly Nefertiti. And then Ian said Mark Anthony. And even though I had no idea, I just went with Ian for some reason. It's like, let's go with Mark Anthony. And of course, you read the correct answer. We were kicking ourselves.
Yes.
And the comics question, what was that question again?
What comic strip features a family dog named Barfy?
Yeah, we wrote Zits because, again, Kyle suggested the Family Circus. And I was like, Family Circus just strikes me as too wholesome to have a dog named Barfy in it. So that's a good, I like that that question too, because it kind of goes against maybe your preconceptions a little bit.
Yeah, that's what I thought. You know, I was also wondering if I was going to catch shit for calling it a comic strip, seeing as there's just one panel.
It is it's a single panel comic, but to me, that didn't raise any red flags, I guess. Could if it was a rate my question, maybe could use a little rework. But at the same time, single panel comic strip, there's only a few of those, I think, you know, so that drastically reduces the amount of options. It makes it a little easier.
Was the Lockhorns a single family or a single panel? No, it wasn't. No, it's multi-panel.
Well, I think it was multi-panel, but wasn't it single panel situations?
I don't think so.
Like they would present two at once? It was always like a...
Maybe you're right. I thought it was something like that, and the more I thought about it, the more I was like, I think there were multiple panels, but maybe it was single panel or multiple panel, but single situation.
Yeah, presented in multi-panel. And then the Benny Goodman one, I have no idea why I rolled over on this, but I was like, clarinet, and they're like, no, he played the trombone. Pretty sure. They're both like, okay, pretty sure. We'll go with trombone. But Benny Goodman played the clarinet. And then there was another one about a president using a Frank Sinatra song.
Yeah, what president used a reworked version of Frank Sinatra's High Hopes for their campaign?
Mm-hmm. And I was thinking JFK, maybe, you know, like they were in each other's circles. But then we decided reworked, maybe some time had passed, significant amount of time. So we went with Reagan. But yeah, should have gone with JFK. Anyway, congratulations to Elise on her victory on Wednesday. Very impressive.
Yes, yes. Glenn Miller is the trombone band leader that I think a lot of people are thinking of. Mm. And maybe I have a feeling for some reason that they get confused a lot. I don't know why that would be, but that's just my feeling. So yeah, it was very, very interesting, like you were saying, trying to looking at the difference between having multiple people and who rolls over, you know what I mean? Who's willing, like it's so funny to me that there was that one night that Kyle Ann had played alone and she did really well. And it seems like as scared as you may be sometimes to play alone, especially when you hit a sweet spot where it's stuff like just kind of like around your wheelhouse of knowledge, when you just kind of have to go with what you know, it's like, well, this is just kind of what I would guess. Like when I asked the question about Nefertiti, I was thinking to myself, like, who knows the name Nefertiti? Is that like a popular enough name? Because a lot of times I'll think, what are just answers that people would say? Like, okay, Amenhotep the IV. I would just say Cleopatra. I just know that's a female name. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing this is a dude from the name. But yeah. I would just like think of like female names that I knew. And if I knew the name Nefertiti, this goes back to something we've talked about a couple times where, you know, when you don't know anything, you just kind of cling on to the what little you do know and just kind of stuff it in there like maybe this will work, you know, maybe this answer will be right. And so it's just like, well, Amenhotep, you're just going to guess probably one of like three or four female-esque names, you know, and one of them will work out. It's almost like a 50-50. It's almost like a multiple choice just because there's, you know, and not much known about that.
You pray that there's not a sharpshooter in the room that just knows that. Some world history major.
Or, you know, well, I like it when people get stuff right. You know, as my trivia is, I think there's a misunderstanding that, like, I want everyone to be wrong. It's the opposite. It makes me so pumped when people get it right.
Totally agree.
You know, it's not about making people feel, you know, people are always like, don't look at my answers, don't think I'm stupid. I'm like, I won't even remember. I've already forgotten. Mm-hmm. Even if all your answers are completely wrong, after tonight, I'll see you on the street and I'll be like, oh, hey, what's going on? And I probably won't even remember you. You know what I mean? This is not for me. Yeah. I mean, like, I'm not in this to, like, make people feel dumb or whatever. You know, even when we had, you know, when we were doing, like, best worst answers and stuff like that, like, it's to have fun. But at the end of the day, I don't, you know, it's just, it's a higher level. It's like Mr. Glass. It's like setting everything at a higher level because you want to find those people that can hit that or higher. When you do a lower level, then everyone's just kind of meeting the middle. But it's nice to put everything up a notch where the middle people are just like, okay, I'm learning some stuff and this is, you know, fun, or we can put funny answers. But all those other smarter people, it's fun to watch them get something. And when they get it right, like when Ewan was playing the other night and he was like pumping his fist, it's like, man, yes, like I was able to reach in there, you know, I was able to like get that fucking answer out. And like, that's why I love when I play trivia, I love to wait on answers. Like people always be like, what was the answer for 6? What was the answer for 9? I'm like, just wait.
Yep.
You know, just like sit on it and just like,
it's like the marshmallow test. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like, it's like edging. It's like, just fucking wait. And when I get there, and that's why I love doing dates, the correct answer is 1980. And everybody's just like, and then you say 6, and you'll see some of them, like some people hit their, you know, significant other. Some people just hang their head. Some people are high fiving. You know, it's just like this right at that moment. You just like see all of this reaction, and it's especially funny on Zoom because I'll give an answer and there will be a lag. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you'll just see bop, 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 like these people, like, you know, you'll just see, like,
you see them get the news.
You just get up from the table and leave, and Elise is like smiling and like, you know, like doing a little fist pump. It's a lot of fun.
Absolutely. We love to see it, don't we?
We do. That's why, yeah, we do it, baby.
And that's why we do the wrap-up and shout out our biggest knowers of the week. On Thursday, June 25th, we had No Nonsense Trivia Challenge on Twitch, number 45 and 50. Quiz number 49 was won by PotterPotter1000 with 82,214 points. Relatively low winning score there. Indicates a hard quiz, I think. And quiz 50, Grantastic Glenn won that one with 147,037 points. H-Bomb and Friends taking the 70s classic rock audio round with a very high score there as well in the mid-100,000s. Don't have it written here. One funny typo that I didn't catch that happened was I asked a question. Which 1947 Christmas film was thought by the FBI to be a, quote, communist infiltration of the motion picture agency due to its portrayal of bakers, is what I said. It should say bankers, though. But I didn't catch it, and I read it, and the answer is It's a Wonderful Life. No bakers, if I can remember, but I just missed it, so I read it straight, and people are like, what? Bakers? I guess I thought it was, wow, like that show Pushing Daisies, or that that movie with Will Ferrell, Stranger Than Fiction.
There's, or like maybe a, My Life.
Communist baker, Mark Davis, Quizmaster Mark Davis. And as far as our high scores for all of June, H-Bomb and Friends took the highest score of the month with 203,002 points. That would be on June 4th. That was set. And also taking the fourth and fifth rank of that, separated by Grantastic Glenn, who had the second two highest scores. I'm sorry, the second and third highest scores of the month for quiz 50 and 48, respectively. So congratulations to them and all of our winners this week. If you want to play No Nonsense Trivia in the coming weeks, you can do so by visiting twitch.tv/No Nonsense Trivia, where we are streaming live on Thursdays. You can play Nice Guys Pizza Trivia with Mark Davis on Wednesday at 8 p.m. Just find the link to that in the description of this episode or on the Nice Guys Pizza Facebook page. And make sure you follow No Nonsense Trivia on social media to stay updated on all of our podcasts, streams, and events. Join us. Won't you, won't you, won't you? Won't you, won't you, won't you? Mark is now very far away from me.
Distance been launched wise. In outer space.
We were going to be joined, and now we're distant.
Yeah, no. So far.
Mark,
so far away.
Let's take a little break, and how about some trivia?
Sounds good to me. Let's do it.
And we're back. Mark, I have a famous families question to kick off round one for you.
Famous families.
Famous families is the category.
Okay.
Which second generation Hollywood actor appears in The Frighteners, Starship Troopers, The Predator, that would be the 2018 version, and recently as Bruce Lowe, a sexist journalist for the Hawkins Post, in the third season of Stranger Things? Second generation Hollywood actor appears in The Frighteners, Starship Troopers, The Predator, and recently as Bruce Lowe, a sexist journalist for the Hawkins Post in the third season of Stranger Things.
Oh my God. Talk about should know this. Frighteners. You said the newest Predator, 2018.
Mm-hmm. The reboot. The third reboot? Is it? I can't keep track.
Is it the third? Yeah, it's hard to say.
Actually, I think it's a sequel. It's not even a reboot. It's just a straight up
Yeah. No, well, that's why I was wondering. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they make them as sequels and prequels and no, but in reality, this isn't related at all. You know?
Mm-hmm. No, it's definitely a sequel.
Predator.
Mm-hmm.
Was there another movie you said?
Starship Troopers.
Starship Troopers.
Mm-hmm.
Sexist journalist. You know, I saw the third season of Stranger Things, and I even want to say I might have seen it more than once. How did you feel about it?
I enjoyed it. I'm excited.
So did I.
For the fourth season. I feel like it's just got a good, fun vibe, that show, you know?
The second season, I didn't like very much. I was worried.
Mm.
Because the second season just basically felt like the first season again.
Well, that's funny. I like the second season so much. I went back and watched the first season because I felt like I got kind of bored with the first season, to be honest.
That's interesting. But the third season felt different. Third season felt fresher and maybe a little campier,
mm-hmm.
which was nice. It wasn't just, they didn't just do a good job, you know, as a period piece. It did a good job in the campiness of the 80s, too. I don't know.
Yep.
It was really good.
We can come together on season 3 for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, we can. We can come together on a lot of things.
All right, let's move on from edging.
Yes.
Back to the question.
Second generation actor.
Mm-hmm.
Man. So I saw season 3 of Stranger Things, and I know I'm trying to think of like the role that the journalist plays.
Bruce Lowe. He gives Nancy a lot of shit about being a woman.
Yeah, because she wants to cover the thing, mm-hmm. but he's saying no.
Mm-hmm. And just as a little hint, since we've already kind of explored this a little bit, his character in The Predator actually proves that it's a sequel and not a reboot.
Yeah, that doesn't help. Um, this third season. I'm going to make it a point. Is this technically the third season
of No Nonsense?
The beginning of the third year. Yeah.
It's defined on our podcast service as just one long season, but I feel comfortable saying third year.
In my heart, it's the third season.
We haven't taken any time off, so you know.
Yeah,
this is one long season.
I'm gonna make it a point to make a lot more mouth noises. Get some of those sweet, sweet 2-star reviews.
Oh, we got another 2-star review.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it says. Let's see here. I'll pull it up here and read it to you. By the way, we appreciate 5-star reviews very much. If you want to help us out against this this 2-star review that we just got, and I feel like this is a bit vendetta-like, this review that we have here. But it's 2 stars, which means they didn't want to give us 1 star because they couldn't call us total crap.
Okay.
But they had to air their grievance. This is from JVM21 on June 11th. Subject: doesn't value older audience. And then the review just says Q-tips ? Because I think in one episode one of us referred to older people as Q-tips because of the white hair on their head.
But
you have to understand where Mark and I live. We're the minority members of the younger population, and it's mostly retirees and stuff, and you know, some of my best friends are Q-tips. Okay.
Oh, that's so fucking funny.
We do value our older audience. I think we have a lot to learn, a lot to learn and a lot to earn from the old population. You know, so
I always tell people having an older person on your team, Jesus, that can help people out so much.
Yeah. Most of the time, you know? I would say.
Yeah.
Many times.
You
so
know, and parents,
and we appreciate our older audience as listeners as well. You don't have to give us a 2-star review. You can just call us out on Facebook. Join our Facebook group in the podcast and just yell at us. You know,
it's if anybody knows JVM11, let them know we're sorry.
Yeah,
and that we say Q-tips endearingly. Mm-hmm. Okay,
we also have some 5-star reviews here. So we want to thank Unoriginal Alex and Rick and Roll 3000 for your support. And yeah, just find us on Apple Podcasts. You can review us on Stitcher as well, or PodChaser, or you know, other places where you might be listening to our podcast. Thank you. Anyways,
yes, I can't think of who it is, and. I'm inclined for whatever reason to say Kevin Bacon. I don't know if Kevin Bacon was in the, for some reason I think Kevin Bacon was in the Frighteners. I don't know if he'd be a second generation actor, but I'm going to say, for the sake of brevity, now that I've been thinking about this for like 20 minutes, I'm going to say Kevin Bacon.
No, I'm sorry, Mark, that's wrong.
Okay.
The correct answer is Jake Busey.
Jake Busey.
Plays Ace Levy in Starship Troopers, the violin playing space marine competing against Johnny Rico, which the character is actually an amalgamation of several characters from the original Starship Troopers novel. In The Predator, Jake Busey plays Sean Keyes, who is the son of Peter Keyes, the CIA agent who hunts the Predator in LA, that was played by Gary Busey in Predator 2, thereby proving it's a sequel. And in Stranger Things, he plays Bruce Lowe, as we mentioned. The Duffer Brothers, the creators of the Stranger Things, made the character Bruce specifically because they loved his performance as serial killer Johnny Bartlett in The Frighteners from 1996.
Are you deep in the Prediverse right now?
After writing this question, I'm a little bit deeper than I was, yeah. But the 2018 movie, I can't say that I enjoyed it very much, to be honest.
Well, that's fine. Yeah. I mean, you can still be deep in the Prediverse and,
the Prediverse. Is that what it's called?
That's what I call it.
it's the same universe as the Alienverse, right?
Technically they have to be, I guess. It's kind of like, the St. Elsewhere. Is it St. Elsewhere?
I'm not sure.
Do you know the thing I'm talking about? We've talked about this before, I think forever ago, about the theory about the kid looking at the snow globe. Do you know this?
It's vaguely ringing a bell now. Yeah.
I think it's the last episode of Saint Elsewhere where you see the building and it's inside of a snow globe,
right.
And it's a child, I think they say with autism, looking at the snow globe, and it basically gives off the idea that the whole show took place inside the kid's head.
Right.
And because of that, any show that was linked to Saint Elsewhere also had to have existed in this child's mind. And because of that, all of the shows that were linked to those. So if, you know, Empty Nest is related to Golden Girls, and then Alf references Empty Nest, and then, you know, Married with Children references Alf, like all these shows have to be connected and, you know, have to all be intertwined with this child.
That is wild.
Being in his mind. Which then gives off the impression that all of these shows he has thought about and all of their interconnectivity throughout his life.
Awesome. Love
it. Isn't that crazy?
Love that theory.
Tommy Westfall, the Tommy Westfall theory is what it's called, of a unified TV universe. 441 television shows are linked.
Holy shit.
As of 2017.
Praise Westfall.
Yes.
One of the brilliant genius creators of our time.
As of this writing, 441 shows can be tied to Saint Elsewhere with varying degrees of separation, ranging from I Love Lucy to The Flash.
It's interesting. This is almost like the TV version of the Bacon.
It's very the separation, which is funny because I guessed Kevin Bacon.
Exactly. Yeah. Very interesting.
Wow. And this all
Tommy Westfall's in your
mind.
Head, man.
All right, here's your first question. The basilisk and the cockatrice are both chimeras made up of what two animals?
The basilisk and the cockatrice?
I heard it pronounced as cockatrice.
I mispronounce things all the time, so I wouldn't be surprised. If
I was
right.
Worried about mispronouncing chimera, but I think I got that. I always thought, you know, when reading, have you ever heard that age old adage, don't make fun of someone for pronouncing something right. It means they learned it by reading it.
Yes, I have. The basilisk and the cockatrice.
Cockatrice.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I think if I remember correctly, the basilisk is part crocodile. And cockatrice, all I hear is cock. So that's got me thinking rooster, chicken, a chicken crocodile? Is that what a basilisk is? That does not sound right. I always thought that basilisk was just like another word for crocodile. I didn't realize it was like a combo animal, combo creature. Yeah. Combo creature.
Combo.
All right, I'm gonna go with crocodile and chicken, which sounds like a weird combo, but let's go.
Sorry, that's incorrect.
Wrong.
You're half correct. Chicken is half of it. The other half is a snake.
A snake. Okay.
You're very close. Yes, half serpent. Half rooster. Toad is sometimes used in place of a serpent. The basilisk, the interesting thing, the basilisk is from the egg of a serpent, and then it is incubated by a rooster. And the cockatrice is the egg of a hen, and it is incubated by a snake.
Interesting.
Those are the differences, which I never knew.
Yeah, I had no idea.
Until this morning.
So it's just them minding each other's offspring, basically, is how you
get
it. Yeah,
basically saying that, you know, which the egg of the one would have maybe stronger features of that animal, and the egg of the other would have stronger features of that animal.
That is such a weird metaphor. Like, when you think about, like, how this, like, came to be in the minds of a human being, you know? Like, what are they trying to... Like, it's a myth, you know, so it's presumably something that, like, a parent might tell their child, you know, like, beware of the basilisk, you know.
I wonder if it's like, you know, like when people hear when kids start writing poetry and they're like 16 and they read it to their mom or dad, and their mom or dad are like, where are you getting that reefer? You know, because like this is really far out there. I wonder if like back then, like people were like, dude, all right. So snakes lay eggs and like hens lay eggs. But what if like a hen got a snake's egg and like chilled on it? And the guy's like, where'd you get that ayahuasca? And he's like, I'm not even high. I'm just saying, like, would it make it part hen? And it's like, imagine a fucking snake hen. And they're just like, what the fuck is happening right now? Please stop talking. You're scaring the children.
Man, it's crazy.
So, yeah.
Literature, Mark, is, well, it's just, this is kind of a literature question, but also more awards focused. You've asked me about the Hugo Awards before, science fiction awards. What's the other big one?
The Nebula. You know, it's funny. I just had lunch with Fro, and he was talking about the Nebula Awards question. Hmm.
There is a third science fiction award. Not sure if you're familiar with it. What award is given to the best short and long science fiction, fantasy, or horror poem of the year, and shares its name with a crater that is located on Earth's moon? The award given for the best short and long science fiction, fantasy, or horror poem of the year, and shares its name with a crater located on Earth's moon.
It definitely sounded like you said horror poem.
That's a popular genre.
I bet. Not that I know. Biggest crater on the moon.
I'm not sure that it's the biggest crater, but it is
a
crater.
Big crater.
It is a crater located on the moon.
This is going to kill me. This might be the one that does it, Lee. 2 years, baby.
What's and wrong?
I might crack.
My voice is cracking.
Wrong?
Yeah.
Hey, what's wrong, Scoob?
What's the name of that award, Scoob?
I know, like, the name of one crater or two craters. This is like we were just talking about, like, the limited knowledge you have that answer is probably the answer. It's like 50-50 if you know the names of two craters. I think I know the name of like one crater, but I can't get it. I'm even trying to think of the name of the volcano or the.
So you don't know it based on just the award name?
No.
I didn't know if in researching your, I think you asked me about the Nebula Award last on here. I was thinking maybe you came across this at the same time.
I think I got there by looking up Isaac Asimov and then something about a book and then something about something. And it was like, this book won the Nebula Award. And I was like, what's that? And like, oh, okay. And I was like, all right. I'm going to do that. A lot of chasing your own tail and ending up on a future question. What is the name? I've asked this question before. The highest peak on the moon or whatever. It's like Mons Olympus. And, I know there's going to be a crater that I know the name of, and I know it's going to end up being the fucking answer. I'm just going to say Olympus.
No, Mark. Wrong. That's wrong. The correct answer is the Riesling Awards. You ever hear those? The Riesling Awards?
But I did not know that is the name of a crater.
Mm-hmm. Given for poetry, so. The Riesling Awards were established in 1978. Prior winners include Neil Gaiman, Ursula K. Le Guin, and Amal Et Motar. The character Noisley Riesling is from Robert A. Heinlein's The Green Hills of Earth. He is a space poet who whose talents are said to rival one of Hyland's inspirations, Rudyard Kipling. Hyland references fictional songs of Riesling throughout his entire oeuvre, which were ultimately pieced together and recorded many times throughout the 20th century, including one performance by Leonard Nimoy. And the moon crater itself was named after the character. When invoked by Capcom Joe Allen on Earth during the Apollo 15 mission, saying to moonwalking American astronauts David Scott and Jim Irwin, "As the space poet Riesling would say, we're ready for you to come back again to the homes of the men on the cool green hills of Earth." So the awards and the crater, both named after this character, Noisy Riesling, from Robert A. Hyland's The Green Hills of Earth.
What about the wine?
What about the wine?
Isn't there a Riesling wine?
There is a Riesling wine, but it's spelled slightly differently. That is okay. R-E-I-S-L-I-N-G. And Riesling in this context is R-H-Y-S-L-I-N-G. Oh. So like, maybe it's Riesling. It's probably Riesling, actually.
I don't know. You might be right. Okay. I mean, that is how I think you'd... I don't know. I think you might be right. Hmm. I'm not giving you a hard time. Good information. Thank you. I've heard of Neil Gaiman. I haven't heard of the other people that won, but I'm sure they're great.
Ursula K. Le Guin is a classic sci-fi author, and Amal L. Motar is actually one of the winningest members of this award. I think she's won 4 or 5 times, and she's a modern poet.
Winningest is such a cool fucking word.
You want to be it. You want to be the winningest.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah.
If you're playing trivia, I mean.
Question number two, speaking of being winningest, question number two. In what sitcom that aired from 1984 to 1992 would you find the actors Richard Mole, Marcia Warfield, and Charles Robinson?
Sorry, one more time.
In what sitcom that aired from 1984 to 1992 would you find the actors Richard Mole, Marcia Warfield, and Charles Robinson?
'84 to 1992.
Yes.
Sitcom. Charles Mole. Marcia. I've already forgotten her name. Marcia.
Marcia Warfield.
Warfield. And.
Richard Mole. And.
Charles Robinson. I can't
remember which ones you already said. Charles Robinson.
'84 to '92.
I can just imagine that there are people screaming at their radio right now. I was kind of on the edge thinking that you might know this.
Mm-hmm. I don't know it right off. And I was born in 85, so it went off the air when I was 7. I wonder, if it's Coach, if Craig T. Nelson is maybe the fourth person that's not being mentioned. But if I remember correctly, Coach also had there was a classic comic, stand-up comic on Coach. Jerry Lewis? No. Richard Mole. That name sounds so familiar. Is he the guy from Lost? Was he on Lost? The guy that played Richard Alpert on Lost with the eyeliner? Or am I just getting my Richards confused? And what was he on? Two men, one woman, Three's Company. Three's Company. Did I just work this out with the math? I have no idea. It could be anything.
No, it couldn't.
Well, in my mind, it could be. That's okay. How little I know is what I mean. I know, so little about this that it could be any answer. I would feel good about almost any answer. I know it's not like Friends or Home Improvement. Watch it be one of those. No. Friends wasn't on that early. But 84 to 92, there's just, it could be Murphy Brown. Was Murphy Brown a sitcom? I'm just trying to think of like sitcoms that I saw when I was a kid that I did not understand.
Murphy Brown was a sitcom.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Three's Company.
I'm sorry, that's incorrect.
Okay.
Was Richard Alpert who you were thinking of?
On Lost?
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. a different guy, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Richard Mall would have played Bull Shannon. Does that ring a bell at all?
Night Court.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Marsha Warfield played Roz. Mm-hmm. Charles Robinson played Mac.
Okay.
Thought about bringing up Marky Post, but I thought Marky Post might be a bigger tip off. She was always one of the lawyer, or not always, I guess, but was one of the lawyers, one of the public defenders. Christine Sullivan, who John Larroquette's character.
That would have helped after. If you would have said yeah. John Larroquette.
Well, that, I knew John Larroquette, and I knew that I knew him, and I knew Harry Anderson would be mm-hmm. big tip offs. But that's why Richard Mull, I thought, was going to be the thing. If you know him from anything, you know him as Bull. Okay.
Gotcha. Yep. And if I remember correctly, Brent Spiner appeared on that show before his days as Data on Star Trek: The Next Generation.
Oh, really?
Mm hmm. He had it was like a breakout performance for him, I think, actually. Got him put on the radar there.
Oh, yeah. And as Bob and June Wheeler, they played Appalachian yokels. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. And Mel Torme was on there a bunch also.
Yeah, I remember seeing a couple episodes when I was a kid, but obviously didn't think about it now. When I needed it most.
Not when you needed it most.
Mark, you want a wine question? Of course you do. Of course you want a wine yes. question.
Please, I don't drink wine ever.
But you just invoked it, so here you go. Thanks to cold winter temperatures, Canada is the world's largest producer of what kind of sweet wine? Thanks to cold winter temperatures, Canada is the world's largest producer of what kind of sweet wine?
Well, I'm not going to fuck around here at all because I don't know. I don't know anything about anything. I wish Ryan and Naomi were here, or I wish Elise was here because they are.
They could be helpful.
They could be very helpful here. But because I just mentioned Riesling and it's just too sweet of an opportunity to pass up.
You think I'm going to put the same answer twice in a row?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Maybe you're being cute. You're always cute, but maybe you're being cute. I'm going to say Riesling.
A noble guess, Mark, but that's wrong. Oof. The correct answer is actually ice wine.
I'd never heard of that before in my life.
Ice wine is made from frozen grapes. It was first discovered in Franconia, Germany in 1794 when vintners pressed the frozen grapes that they'd left on the vines. That was going to be used for animal fodder. And they found that these grapes were especially sweet, and sweet wines were very popular in Germany at the time. So they capitalized on that, calling it Eiswein. That's actually what they called it. Eiswein, E-I-S-W-E-I-N. And the first Canadian ice wine was made in 1978 by Hanley Vineyards in British Columbia. It now dominates the market, but ice wine is also produced in Australia, Austria, New Zealand, Israel, and the state of California. The Canadian harvest only happens in the winter once temperatures have fallen below 8 degrees Celsius, and the harvest can only last for 2 to 3 days. And in the East, it is considered a luxury item that is typically given as a gift. Ice wine.
That just sounds cheap.
Well, this is my version of your glitter question, Mark. Thanks to cold temperatures...
I see.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, it was even harder than mine. All right, here's your third question. The short story, The Greatest Gift, became what movie which was selected for preservation by the National Film Registry in 1990?
What was the... Did you give the original year?
No.
The movie was called The Greatest Gift originally?
The short story was called The Greatest Gift.
Oh. And it was turned into a film that was inducted into the
National... The National Film Registry in 1990.
I don't feel like they sleep on those too frequently. I mean... Well, that's not true. I feel like they add stuff from all eras all the time. The Greatest Gift. The Greatest Gift. 1990 is when it was inducted. This is such a interesting clue. Like, I feel like most quizmasters might go like, oh, the movie was released in this date. This is like that one extra step, you know,
mm-hmm.
of knowing what the Library of Congress deems important. That's tough. And no, no movie production release date. 1990, The Greatest Gift. 1990. It's probably going to be something stupid like Encino Man. I think that's a little after 1990, but... Greatest Gift. Maybe it came out in the 80s then. Miracle on 34th Street. No, based on a short story. The Greatest Gift. Citizen Kane, that just seems way too late. Like, they would have been on that Citizen Kane tip like much earlier than 1990.
Right. Maybe that's part of and the crazy thinking, of like, the question.
Rosebud, that could be. Rosebud, was that a gift? It was his favorite possession. Spoiler alert.
It was his favorite position.
The Greatest Gift. All right. This is kind of out there. And maybe this is just because we just got done talking about sci-fi awards. But maybe it's 2001, A Space Odyssey. They came out in the 70s, so had time to percolate, had time to marinate. And
I suggest you let that one marinate.
Outcast. Put them on Stank Mountain, please. Hashtag Stank Mountain. We want Stone Mountain. Get Outcast, Big Boy and Andre 3000 etched in there. Sign the petition. Find it in the link. I'm going to put in the link of this episode.
If anybody's looking for famous people to back up mm-hmm. that cause, well, you get two of them.
Yep.
We're about as famous as it gets.
Probably for that petition.
Yeah.
We're starting a movement. Stanley Kubrick was from Brooklyn. He's kind of regarded as a British filmmaker because he lived in Britain and worked out of Britain, but grew up in New York. So
he's a man of the York.
So there is some American relevance there, and The Gift could be a Arthur C. Clarke short story. I know the screenplay and the book were written at the same time, though. So that I just talked myself out of it. That seems rather dubious. You said it was a short story, right?
Initially, yes.
Hmm. Well. I just don't know. I'm going to go with 2001, A Space Odyssey.
I'm sorry, that's incorrect. The correct answer, the movie was released in the 1940s.
Okay.
Do you have a guess from there?
The Greatest Gift.
I
want to
say it was released in 1943, I think.
No.
Directed by Frank Capra.
The Maltese Falcon.
It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, here we are.
Here we are.
You know, when I started thinking about gifts, like it kind of popped in my head, and I just like swept it away.
Let it go.
I swept it away.
It's so funny how when you have the answer right in front of you, stuff is so obvious.
Because we just mentioned it.
Yeah, but it's and that's the other thing, as you just mentioned it. Mm-hmm. But it's so funny when you have the answer, you're just like, the greatest gift, of course, this gift of being able to see what the world is like without you. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're standing on a bridge about to kill yourself, what greater gift is there? But when you're just left on, oh, it's this movie from this, you know, thing called The Greatest Gift, you're like, oh, well, like, what gift? Maltese Falcon, you know, you think of all this, like, you know, riches and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Very, very interesting. But I did think the thing that I thought was interesting was the 1990 film registry. I mean, a movie that's considered such a classic, that's played over and over and over again every holiday season. It's considered one of the best, you know, by a lot of people, one of the best or most hopeful movies of all time. 1990, it took for them to get into the National Film Registry.
Yeah, that's wild. And as you illustrated, you know, calling it a 1947 film does make it significantly easier than having that. So that is that's very interesting. I love that question mark.
Thank you.
All right. How about we take a little break, and we don't have any no notes, so we'll just be right back with some trivia. All right, we're back. I was wrong. We do have one miscorrection and a little bit of commentary from Mark. So let's have a little miscorrection segment here.
Miscorrection.
Not bad.
I think I skipped a note somewhere.
We were on beat for a second, and then we fell off. I wonder how that'll line up. We'll see.
Well, very well, I'm sure.
We got a note here, a miscorrection from Laura. Laura says, "Hey guys, longtime listener here from Michigan. I'm an operating room nurse, and I want to let you know that we do still use cocaine in medicine."
Hell yeah.
It's used in ENT, that stands for ear, nose, and throat, surgeries for vasoconstriction as an anesthetic, and it also shrinks mucous membranes like nasal passageways. Sometimes we do combined neurosurgery with ENT procedures, so the nasal passages need to be open and clear to allow access to the brain. It comes as a concentrated solution for medical use, not in a powder form like the street drug. Love listening to you guys every Monday. Laura.
Thank you, Laura. And Mike mentioned, I don't know if this is true, but he said the bromine question that you that was asked, the only other one that's to stay a liquid. Mike says that he thinks he sent that in as a rate my question a long time ago. I'm not sure if you have any recollection of that or if anybody else does, but he said he might be wrong, but he's usually got a short memory.
Yeah. Let's see. I'll just do a quick search here.
Okay.
Well, he didn't include the answer, probably. I don't know. See, that's the thing. Mike, sometimes if you email it to us, it's great because we can search. But if this came in a text message or a messenger thing, as they sometimes do.
Right.
Mike Element. My email's like, who's Mike? Yeah, when I search for Element, only Paul's question comes up. So I'm not sure. Sorry, Mike.
Maybe he's a damn liar.
Some
keep
of these
your receipts, Mike.
Some of these too. It might even be here in the document. Now that I think about it, some, you know, we have a queue here. We have a queue of rate my questions, and we try to get through them. But sometimes a topical question come up, we want to put that in. Sometimes we haven't heard from people in a while.
Yeah, it can be tough.
Yep,
it's a lot to. It's a lot for a band to do.
But thank you for, calling us out. You know, send us a, I don't know if that's something that we necessarily need to hear. Like, hey, you didn't read my question. But we try to get to everything that we can.
I think he's saying that he sent it and we rated it before.
Oh, it's a repeat rate my question.
I think that's what he's saying, yes.
Oh my gosh. Well, that's terrible if that's true.
That we may have rated it before.
It's 2 years, folks. We've already started to forget the things that happened 2 years ago. So you have two choices from here. You can continue to listen to us, or you can hear pretty much the same show by going back to episode one.
But you can laugh at us if you remember stuff, because you're like, how do you not remember, bro mine?
Yeah.
You answered this in episode 15.
That is totally possible. But we'd love to hear from you. So please, if you have a missed correction, rate my question, or even just a little no note, please write to us at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com. Give us a call at 1-929-356-6966 or find us on social media. All right.
Are you ready?
Yes.
First question of the second round.
Yes.
What English philosopher born in 1588 is known for writing the book Leviathan and has been called by some the patriarch of artificial intelligence?
Wow. The Leviathan, the patriarch of artificial intelligence, British philosopher born in the early 16th century.
Back then, artificial intelligence. Hmm. As we we'll take a big swig.
Yeah.
A big drinky.
British. So when I was thinking of artificial intelligence and people that were born hundreds of years ago, Descartes came to mind, but that is a French name. I believe he's a French person, not British. Rene Descartes. British philosopher. John Locke. maybe it's John Locke. And as mentioned in my last sus, I do love Lost, the television series featuring a character named John Locke.
That's who, when you said John Locke, I was like, are you talking about Lost?
Back on that Lost tip. And maybe there's something to this. Maybe you're I don't know if you wrote these questions ahead of time or if you're just going off the whim here, but maybe this is another It's a Wonderful Life thing. You're just building off what I just said. Maybe it is John Locke. Maybe you're sitting there going, like, looking at the Lost IMDb going, who's this motherfucker John Locke? Or how did he get his name? And he is a British philosopher. And I know that there's others. I can't really call them to mind right now. Bertrand Russell, born in the 20th century, I think. Let's see here. Jung, I think, is German. Carl Jung. Is he German? Nietzsche's German. Or Austrian. One of those. I'm going to go with John Locke.
I'm sorry, that's incorrect.
What do we got?
The correct answer is Thomas Hobbes.
Thomas Hobbes. Okay.
Thomas Hobbes.
The namesake of Hobbes from Calvin and Hobbes.
Yes, that's correct. Mm. Yes.
Okay.
Very, very, very interesting guy. 1588 is a long freaking time ago. Cannot imagine what the hell it was like living back then. Though I guess being a philosopher back then had to be pretty easy because there was so much to think.
So what else are you going to do? Watch YouTube? No. Right.
Leviathan, he expounds an influential formulation of social contract theory. He also did a lot of history, geometry, physics. It's kind of like we were talking about with being a scientist, you know, when I was saying, like, nowadays when you're a scientist, you kind of do like one thing.
It's a specialty.
This motherfucker did it all.
A polymath.
The physics of gases, theology, ethics, philosophy. He did it all.
That's awesome. Great question.
Yeah. Thank you.
How about a memes question, Mark?
Give me that.
Okay. You've been on the internet for a while, right? You remember 2010?
Yeah.
At an after party at the 2010 Webby Awards, tech bro Naveen Selvadari was photographed presenting what beverage, a meme at the time, to NASA astronaut Buzz Aldrin? At an after party at the 2010 Webby Awards, tech bro Naveen Selvadari, the co-founder of Foursquare, was photographed presenting what beverage, a meme at the time, to NASA astronaut Buzz Aldrin.
A beverage that was a meme 10 years ago. Well, you know, the thing that, like, keeps sticking in my head is, and it shouldn't be, I'm sure, but that Buzz Aldrin was an astronaut and Tang was, like, the first drink in space. But I don't remember, and so I'm making that, like, that connection. And I don't know if I should. I probably shouldn't. Because he probably wasn't doing it because it was Buzz Aldrin. He was probably doing it because it was a famous person. Not him in particular. Like, specifically. But I don't know what to put for an answer. I don't know what to say. I don't know what... I can't think of, off the top of my head, a memed drink. And I'm sure that once you say it, I'll be like, oh, yeah, okay, that was a thing. But there's nothing. I think I'm just going to go with Tang.
No, Mark. Sorry. He was a tech bro. You might remember a little website called brosicingbros.com. Smirnoff Ice is the answer. Smirnoff Ice. Buzz Aldrin, a recovering alcoholic, declined.
Oh, okay.
You might remember the icing meme meant that you had to, if you're presented with a Smirnoff Ice, you were obligated to drink it.
Of course.
And so, yes. Naveen...
No worse fate.
Yeah. Yep, it took the nation by storm in 2010, yeah, and then it was gone. It was probably some marketing technique, you know? I mean, come on, right?
Right, yeah. All right, here's your next question. Mm-hmm. What extreme sport, named after an acronym, is statistically the most dangerous?
Named after an acronym. Extreme sport. There's one where you jump off a tall point and throw your parachute. You like hold it in your hand and throw it. And the idea, I guess, is that you would I don't know. I don't know what the idea is there. It seems like throwing it and pulling a string, there wouldn't be much difference there, but I guess there is some that make people want to do that. And I think it's called base jumping. And if I remember correctly, I think I've only seen base jumping with capital letters, which would imply that it's an acronym. And before this, though, I always just thought it was like base, like, oh, you're jumping off of the base of something. You know, that's why it's called that. But maybe base stands for, like, you know, ballistic skydiving or ballistic air skydiving expoundment. I don't know. Base jumping is what I'm going with for my answer.
That is correct.
Hey, all right.
So base jumping stands for buildings, antennas, spans or bridges, and earth, like cliffs.
Oh, things like that. I had no idea. That makes sense. You're jumping off all those things.
Yeah.
Base jumping. Nice.
Base jumping. Good job.
Thank you. All right. A celebrities question for you, Mark. Pop culture celebrities. What comedian, known for the transpositional pun, is a trained painter, as well as a certified expert on the subject of comedy and personal relationships, producing a dissertation on the law of laughter, aka LOL, to earn a doctorate degree from Pepperdine University in 2019. A comedian known for the transpositional pun, a trained painter, as well as a certified expert on the subject of comedy and personal relationships. Now a doctor.
Transpositional pun. What the hell is a transpositional pun? That's question number one. Oh boy. Trained painter. You know, can I hear it one more time?
Absolutely. What comedian, known for the transpositional pun, is a trained painter, as well as a certified expert on the subject of comedy and personal relationships, producing a dissertation on the law of laughter, also known as LOL, to earn a doctorate degree from Pepperdine University in 2019?
All right. I'm probably wrong here, but Jim Carrey, there was this thing about him painting, about him like going to like this dark place or whatever, and thing with him painting. And I remember seeing a video of him dressed up in like a cap and gown. And I don't know if he was just like, you know, a guest speaker, or if he had like gone to like late in his life, like become a doctor. Because he's on some real shit. He's one of those dudes like Russell Brand who like got in the business and like, instead of like letting it swallow him up, they were just like, oh, I'm just going to like, let you know what's up. You know, I'm just going to tell you the truth and like tell you what's going on. And he seemed to be like that, like, okay, enough, like fucking around. This like was damaging to me. And like, you know, you probably heard the thing about, who was the guy who, did, Eternal Sunshine,
Michel Gondry.
And he saw him when they were like, before they started shooting. And he's like, you look miserable. What's wrong with you? And he's like, you know, I'm going through a divorce or whatever. And he's like, don't change from that until we shoot the movie. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you know, this guy is asking me to like live in this state of like misery just for this, you know,
right,
for this movie. But you know,
kind of has that Alfred Hitchcock vibe to it, you know, like, well, you're here to, or Kubrick even, you know.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't, you know, I know it's a touchy subject, but it's definitely a difference between movies for entertainment and movies for art. You know, I think anybody who sees Eternal Sunshine can agree that that's like an art. It's, you know, that is an effective movie. You know, it's, if there was any movie that I was going to make myself feel miserable for an extra 6 months for that to be created and to affect the people it affects and to do what it did for so many people, then that movie would be it. I wouldn't do that for, you know, Meet the Clumps or whatever the fuck, but you know, but you know, I would do it for myself, but I wouldn't ask someone else to do it. You know what I mean? And I guess that's where it starts getting tricky. But knowing that, you know, he's kind of gone through this state of like self, you know, reflection, that he was doing a lot of painting and stuff like that, I'm going to go with Jim Carrey.
No, Mark, I'm sorry, that's wrong. And frankly, you're diminishing the emotional sacrifice that Eddie Murphy made with Meet the Clumps. I just want to point that out.
I'm sorry.
To bring that art to the silver screen. The correct answer is Dr. Yakov Smirnoff.
Are you fucking ready for this? I was just about to fucking mention him when we were talking about Night Court because he was on Night Court as a Russian immigrant.
That's crazy. So the transpositional pun is, you know, in America, you watch TV. In Soviet Russia, TV watches you. That's, you know, the flipping of the words to create a new context. That is a transpositional pun.
Damn.
Yakov Smirnoff.
Well, that's so fucking funny. I've been wondering
we're getting a lot of crossover
what he's been
here.
Up to. I know. This is, it's very, we're flirting with disaster. Here's your second question of the third question of the second round. Greeks consider Tuesday to be an unlucky day in part due to the falling of what city?
Well, shit, man. I mean, I guess, you know, what could be more unlucky than a huge ass volcano exploding and killing everyone? Pompeii? That would be my guess, is maybe Pompeii blowing up on a Tuesday, as the song goes. Pompeii?
That's incorrect. I'm sorry. The correct answer is Constantinople.
Oh, the fall of Constantinople.
Yes.
I'm not even sure if Pompeii's in Greece.
I want to say it is, but I might be wrong. Or it seems Greece adjacent, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. So Constantinople taken over by the Ottomans, if memory serves, then becoming...
Pompeii is an ancient city in Italy.
Italy. Okay. Yep.
Oops.
In my head, I said, don't say Rome. That's in Italy.
We all know it fell, but
yeah, I don't know if you'd consider Pompeii falling necessarily. Constantinople falling. That makes more sense.
Yeah,
for sure. And, shame on me for not thinking of the, great, They Might Be Giants song to help me out there.
Istanbul, not Constantinople. That was Istanbul. I faded myself out.
We could probably sing that whole song if we wanted to.
Oh yeah.
Vocabulary is the last category that I have for you this round, Mark.
Okay.
What Yiddish word is used in card games to play a high scoring card to, I'm sorry, let me start over. What Yiddish word is used in card games to play a high scoring card to a trick in the hope that your partner will win it? So you want to put your high value card into the trick. What Yiddish word describes that action?
Don't know. All I can think of is, do you remember the Yahoo version of Scrabble?
Vaguely. I mean, we're going beyond 2010 here, I think. This is pre-Smirnoff Ice.
Yakov Smirnoff Ice. Wow, you had two Smirnoffs. Was that on purpose?
Was it, Mark?
I don't know. I'm trying to find all the Smirnoffs in the world. I can't remember the name of the game, but I remember we used to play with each other, and there was a button called Kibitz. I'm trying to think of like some other, it sounds very Hebrew or Yiddish, and I can't think of any other Yiddish word off the top of my dome, if you will, that
off the top of your schmeckle. Is that what that means?
Off the top of my moil. I can't. I remember being like, I don't know what this button does. I don't know what kibitz means. But because it was related to the game, I think maybe it had something to do with talking or something. But I'm not positive on that. And because it's game related and it seems Yiddish, because there's a Z at the end of it, I guess I never thought of the close relation between the Yiddish language and Ebonics. Just Z's on the end of stuff. Or not Ebonics, I guess, necessarily, but, you know, like nu metal.
Sure. These are all alterations on the language, on the common tongue. That's how language works.
A love for Z's, which never get enough love. Anyway, because I'm considering the word kibitz or kibitz with this Yahoo version of Scrabble, and we're talking about a game, I'm going to go with kibitz.
No, Mark, I'm sorry. That's wrong. There is, kibitz is a game related term though, so you're not too far off from your sus. Kibitz is to offer unsolicited advice during a game. So when you're, you know, playing poker and somebody is like, you know, talking like, hey, you know, maybe you should like not, you know, bet so big or something like that. That is kibitz.
Gotcha.
The correct answer to add a high value card to a trick in the hopes that you're teammate would earn it is known as a schmear. As a schmear.
Oh, I've never heard that.
Schmear, just so you would have cream cheese on your bagel, schmeared on your bagel. It stems from the Middle English word smearen, which means to anoint with oil or fat. And in German, in particular, it went on to mean butter originally. And of course, today's usage, cream cheese, some other similar spread, schmear.
Huh. So, yes.
Schmear the trick here.
That word is very is used a lot in Cinnabon also.
Mm.
They specifically have a caramel schmear.
Okay, so it's spreaded, assumingly?
Yeah, can be. Yep.
Mm, sounds good.
It's it is tasty.
Okay.
Is that it?
That's it for round two.
Well, I gotta take a piss.
Okay.
So let's take a break.
Let's do it.
And then are we gonna rate a question?
We're gonna rate two questions.
Going to rate two questions and then our final questions after this.
Right, we're back. Before we get to our final trivia questions we have prepared for each other, we're going to do a couple rate my questions.
Question. I thought you were going to go with the Ray, so I held back.
I was, and I didn't. Katie Willemzig has a little message for us. Says, hey guys, longtime listener and first time rate my questioner here. Here's the question. What phenomenon, according to psychologists, consists of seven total phases, which include aura, capture, trolling, depression, wooing, and totem? There's a lot going on here. What phenomenon, according to psychologists, consists of seven total phases, which include aura, capture, trolling, depression, wooing, and totem?
I love this fucking question already.
Mm-hmm. What do you love about it?
I love that I don't know it.
Aura, capture, trolling, depression, wooing, and totem.
This just reeks of a question that here's the beauty of this question, Lee. I don't know it, but I feel like I know I should know it. I feel like I'll know the answer. I feel like I'm going to learn something here today. It doesn't seem so far outside of, you know, it's not like what Russian weightlifter, you know, it's like, oh, Jesus Christ, you know, who knows? But this, a phenomenon.
You can chew on it a little bit.
Yes, you can chew on it a little bit. It's not super obvious, but I think we can get there.
It's like a nice cut of steak versus like a wafer.
Yes.
You know, this question's got some fat, some salt on it.
Imagine a nice sous vide ribeye, you know, maybe marinated for a little bit in some of your favorite spices. Cooked in a sous vide for 2 hours with a couple pads of butter. And then you just sear that baby on a cast iron. And yes, oh, and all that smoke, and it smells so good. 30 seconds aside, let's not get too crazy, versus a thin sliced London Royal cooked well done with a side of ketchup.
Blah.
Yeah. This is that.
Keep your Russian weightlifters. We want this aura. We want this capture. We want this trolling, depression, wooing, and totem. What phenomenon is this, Mark?
What do you think? Do you have a guess?
Well, the other day when I was doing some research for a neurology question, I came across, after I read this submission, I came across the word aura. And I was like, oh, maybe it's headaches or something. But looking at it, capture, trolling, depression, wooing, and totem, that doesn't seem like a headache terms. Those don't seem like headache terms. Aura, I get, you know, aura is like, you know, the sense that you have around you. You know, maybe you get like some kind of like sensory feeling, you know.
Let me ask you this. What do you think about the word phenomenon?
It's a carefully chosen word, I think. But phenomenon to me in the sense, you know, is describing a experience that people can have, basically. It is like a psychological experience, phenomenon according to psychologists. So with that in mind,
psychologists, damn.
I'm wondering if it's something like seduction, you know, aura, capture. I don't know how trolling and depression fit in, but wooing. And totem might be some kind of reverence. That's kind of how I think about that.
I was thinking a ghost.
Ghost? A phenomenon? Like a metaphysical phenomenon? Yeah.
Listen, you start off as an aura, right?
Uh-huh.
And then what's the next one?
Capture.
Okay, and then you're like, your energy is captured,
okay,
in some kind of form.
Like a Ghostbuster type thing? Oh, okay. Trolling.
Mm-hmm. You start going around and fucking with people.
Depression.
Well, now you're sad because you realize
you're a ghost.
You're around these people, but you can't interact with them fully. What's the next one?
Wooing.
Woo! That's when you start wooing.
And totem.
And then totem, I'm guessing, because when I think of totem, I think of, what was that movie where everything is all a dream?
What Dreams May Come?
No, you know, Dream Inside Inception.
Oh.
They have the totem, which was like a thing for them to hold on to know that they were, right?
Mm-hmm.
Remember, it was a thing that would react a certain way.
So you think psychologists are getting together and talking about the stages of being a ghost?
Well, that's why when you said psychologist, I was like, oh, shit.
Mm-hmm.
But man, doesn't that kind of work? I'm especially proud of wooing.
What if it's Woo. Dreaming? Or it could be dreaming. Or
what about,
depression?
Specifically, what about, ooh, what if it's, lucid dreaming specifically?
Hmm. Aura capture, so like you capture the thought that you're in a dream or something?
Yeah, something like that.
Trolling, that seems complicated. Like for me, like when I imagine lucid dreaming, like once you're in, you don't need all these phases. Because it's like in lucid dreaming, you just have an awareness like, oh, wait, I'm dreaming and I can stay dreaming and just kind of control things. That's kind of the idea behind lucid dreaming, right?
Yeah. Or at least that you can control.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Aura. Capture. Phenomenon. Trolling. Depression. Wooing and totem. This is trolling, depression, and wooing are such odd characteristics. Trolling being like trolling along like a fishing lure. That kind of trolling. Do you think that's what that means?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how it's used. Yeah, I don't think it's probably used in the way of like trolling like the internet, but
is it possible that these are out of order? Like, could it be aura, wooing, it is capture? Possible.
That would be fucked up if this person, if Katie Willemsig did that mm-hmm. to us. Katie, I'm going to have words with you if you fucked with the order.
Well, let's see what happens here. I don't know, Mark. This one it's tough. It's good. It's chewy. Maybe it's too chewy. it's sharply written, though. I just don't know if I have a clear answer here.
Remember, that's your problem, not the world's problem.
Mm-hmm.
Psychologist. When you think of psychology, when you think of... trying to think of like psychological problems. Like, could it be, what is it called? Multiple personality disorder? Schizophrenia.
Well, those aren't mutually exclusive, but I think multiple personality disorder is included as a type of schizophrenia.
Well, I was saying them as two separate.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's also that would be a diagnosis. I don't know that I would classify that as a phenomenon. Phenomenon to me is like this is something that this is an experience or something that happens, and we don't really know why. There doesn't seem gotcha. To be, you know, and it's not something that can be diagnosed. It's just like a, you know.
What about out of body experience? That's kind of like the ghost thing that I was talking about earlier.
Yeah.
But it would be more psychological.
Mm-hmm.
Aura.
Yep. Out of body experience. Capture. Trolling.
Maybe that's like floating above yourself.
Wooing.
I don't know, man. Wooing. I'm just shooting.
That's what I'm saying. Like seduction or
going woo.
What if it's edging? Why do they do it? Why do people do it?
Oh,
on a psychological level.
If Katie fucking got us with an edging question.
I'm here. I'm in that aura zone. Here I am. I can. It's amorphous and weird, but here I am.
Uh-huh.
On the
keep
edge.
Keep going.
And now I'm trolling. Then what? Now I'm trolling. I'm just giving myself just enough to keep going. Depression. How long can I live like this?
Oh, boy.
And I guess capture comes at the end in this case. It's got to go somewhere.
Yeah, maybe it is out of order.
What do you think, man?
Out of body experience, I guess, is the best thing I've got.
All right, we'll go with it. Sadly, it's not out of body experience, and even more sadly, it is not edging. The correct answer is the seven psychological phases of serial killing. Serial killing.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And there's a link here to thecrimemag.com that identifies these seven phases described by psychologist Joel Norris in the 1998. Norris worked on the defense teams of several convicted killers from Georgia and completed 500 interviews with such individuals, during which he identified the following phases: aura, trolling, wooing, capture, murder, totem, and depression phase. And Katie said I left out the murder phase because that would clearly give it away completely.
Absolutely, yeah.
That is a detail that I did not pick up on in the question, because it does say consists of seven total phases, which include.
You know, I was thinking at one point, you know, we should probably count to see how many there were listed, but
I just assumed they were all there.
When we assume, we make an ass out of you and me.
We really
and
did.
Both of us.
We really did. That's a great question, I have to say.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was going to say maybe I would just list less of the things so that way it's obvious that there wasn't seven.
Yeah, like you only list three, like totem, yeah, wooing, and trolling. That would make it a lot harder, even harder than it was probably.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, and isn't that funny that you're giving less information, but it's kind of helpful because it lets you know that it's leaving some stuff out. Unless you're like being super specific and being like, I'm going to count when there's that many, you kind of assume, oh, all of them have to be there. By taking some out, you make it a little bit harder, but a little bit easier. I don't know that totem and some of those would really help you at all. You know what I mean?
Knowing the answer, I like the way that this question is written. I don't know that I would remove them because I can see how you might be able to suss, like especially capture, trolling, you know. I can see how those would be beneficial. And totem not so obvious, but I like its inclusion. I kind of like this question just the way that it is.
Honestly. Yeah, trolling takes on a whole new meaning now that we know that it's serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yep. So I give this question
the second
A.
One? Yeah, I give it an A also. Great question. I knew in my loins it was going to be good when I heard it, and I was right.
Yes. Here's a message from Eric.
I was told this is a good place to send some hot, hot trivia. And I got you a hot one right now. Ja Rule, Biggie Smalls, Exhibit, Donald Glover, Patti Smith, and Dwight D. Eisenhower all practice what religious denomination at some point in their lives? I've sent you the answer to nononsensetrivia@gmail.com. Thank you.
I like the aura that he's giving off there. I feel I feel captured and like I want to build a totem.
hot trivia.
Ja Rule, Biggie Smalls, Exhibit, Donald Glover, Patti Smith, and Dwight D. Eisenhower all practiced what religion denomination at some point in their lives?
Dwight D. Eisenhower totally comes out of left fucking field.
Yeah, man.
Do you have any ideas?
Well, my first thought was Islam. But Eisenhower practicing Islam, I feel like we would have at least heard about that. And that would also feel out of left field. Judaism is another idea that I had. But again, I feel like we would know about that. Like, from the Eisenhower thing, like, oh yeah, we had a president who did practice Judaism. Maybe that's what it is, and I just don't know that. I know there are Ethiopian Jews, black Jews. I don't know if there is any relationship there between the four rappers mentioned at the beginning here, Ja Rule, Biggie Smalls, Exhibit, Donald Glover. Patti Smith. Patti Smith strikes me as an irreligious person that maybe worships menstrual blood. I don't know what the name for that is. So.
Wiccan.
Again, yeah, Dwight Eisenhower as a Wiccan. I feel like we would have heard about that.
He might be a wizard. Or warlock, whatever it is.
Drinking that Eisenvine. what do you think?
Could it just be a really obvious answer, like Christian?
Denomination, like, that's a... not religion. Yeah, what religious denomination? That's also another thing where Judaism and Islam might not make sense. because those are religions, not denominations.
Seventh-day Adventist.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know,
man. The Seventh-day Adventists are, that's the Church of Latter-day Saints, right?
Yeah. Believe so.
Mormon? Could they all be Mormon at some point?
I doubt it.
Ja Rule is a Mormon?
I feel like we'd heard about that. I was watching, I know you're not a fan, but I was rewatching season, I think, 5 or 6 of Letterkenny. And they have an episode with Mennonites.
Mm-hmm.
They talk a little bit about Mennonites being in their like community or whatever. And they're called the Dicks. The family is the D-Y-C-Ks. And they all have funny first names that go with it. Like Anita Dick.
Harry. Yeah.
Noah
yeah.
Dick.
Biggie Smalls. What religion? Oh, I didn't mean to cut you off there.
Oh, no. It's fine. Biggie Smalls Dick.
Biggie Smalls, what religion?
Exhibit Dick. Hey, this works really well. What would Biggie Smalls be brought up? I mean, I'm trying to figure, like, for whatever reason, I'm thinking that they were probably this religion when they were young and got out of it, but mm-hmm. maybe not. Biggie Smalls didn't live long. He mm-hmm. died in his 30s or 40s.
Early
30s. So, like, he was either brought up some way by his mom and stopped doing it, which is probably the case.
Donald Glover was in the comedy troupe Derek Comedy. So, as a young man, he had access to comedy as a profession. Who are funny? Jews!
I'm trying to think, like, I was thinking, like, when I started hearing some of the latter people, I was like, oh, like, maybe Pastafarianism. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's like Eisenhower? A funny thing or whatever. But then I heard Eisenhower yeah. and I was like, well, no, that won't work.
Could they be Rastafarian? Man. Eisenhower?
I was thinking that too, but exactly. Everyone I think of, I'm like, I think of like predominantly like, because all those first people are predominantly, you know, are all black.
Mm-hmm.
So you think, like you said, like Nation of Islam, mm-hmm. Rastafarianism, something like that, or they don't, Rastafaris do not like isms. So I think they prefer Rastafari.
Mm-hmm.
But,
Eisenhower.
And then it's like, oh, Eisenhower. I mean, maybe when he got like really old, I don't know.
That Eisenhower is what makes this question a fine question into a great question. This level of sus that we need to go.
Yeah. I mean, it could be like just a specific kind of Christian, like Southern Baptist. You know,
yeah,
Pentecostal, Episcopalian.
Biggie Smalls, New York, Ja Rule, where's he from?
New York.
He is?
Yeah, I think so.
Exhibit is West Coast, right?
I think so.
Patti Smith, New York.
You would guess.
Eisenhower. Who knows?
Probably New York.
Some Jeopardy player. Excuse me.
Presbyterian. I mean, the thing is knowing Fro, it would be a funny answer, mm-hmm. especially with this dichotomy here.
Yep.
But I mean, you know, maybe the humor is just in the dichotomy. This is playing to your judge. This is, you know, this is apples to apples rules here. You know, this is where I'm getting meta with it.
It does not usually help us.
No.
To go by that.
Usually hurts us.
So what do you think, man? Should we just go with Presbyterian? I think Southern Baptist would be weird given the location.
Yeah, no, I was just saying, like, you know.
Mm-hmm. Or Lutheran, or I don't know.
Yeah, you pick one of those.
Amish is funny. Mennonite. That's
it is not that. That Mennonite would be hilarious, but there's no way. Exhibit Dick.
Yeah, let's just go with Presbyterian. Why not?
All right, we'll go with Presbyterian.
Oh man, why didn't we think of this? Jehovah Witness. Jehovah Witness. Other notable former witnesses: the Wayans brothers, Jackson 5, and Dave Mustaine. The Williams sisters, Selena and Venus, are still practicing. Prince and Selena, the musical artist Selena, were both practicing until their deaths.
Dave Mustaine.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have time to talk to me about your Lord?
The frontman of Megadeth, formerly of Metallica, Dave Mustaine.
Indeed.
That's a much more interesting answer than Presbyterian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. And like I said, it's kind of the thing you're born into, don't want to do, end up getting out of.
Great set of question here from Katie and Eric. If you've got one, you can, of course, send it to us at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com. Or, of course, you can give us a call at 1-929-356-6966. Okay.
Lee, please, won't you give me a last question? I need to get this one right.
Part-time musicians. Part-time musicians is the category. You like music? Pepper Martin, Ripper Collins, Bill McGee, Bob Weiland, and Frenchie Brodgeray, who played a contraption that included a washboard, a car horn, a whistle, and an electric light, were all members of the marvelous musical Mississippi Mudcats, as well as what championship-winning sports team that itself was known as the Gas House Gang? What team featured those players and a side band called the Marvelous Musical Mississippi Mudcats? Championship-winning sports team.
Well, I don't know. Their name is either just like being silly and saying Mississippi because they're playing a style of music that's like, you know, Delta blues or something, or they're from Mississippi, which means they'd be like a Mississippi team. And what big sports teams are from Mississippi? And I can't think of any, and I'm going to feel like a ding dong. Can you name the people again?
Pepper Martin, Ripper Collins, Bill McGee, Bob Weiland, and Frenchie Brodgeray.
Yeah. Mississippi. What cities are in Mississippi? Capital of Mississippi is what? Man. Ripper Collins. It sounds like baseball to me. The names sound kind of baseball-y, or at least some of them did. Championship sports team. That one name, Frenchie. Jeez Louise. This sucks knowing I haven't gotten any questions right and that I'm not going to get this right. For our 2-year anniversary, just go out feeling like a ding-dong. The Mississippi Mudcats. What was the name of the band again?
The band was the Marvelous Musical Mississippi Mudcats. And the sports team nickname was the Gas House Gang.
Gas House Gang. I'm going to say Houston Astros.
Wrong. No, Mark. They are from Mississippi. They would be... Wait, are they from Mississippi? Hold on. Did I give you the wrong answer? Hold on. Wait a second. I need to double check this band name. They were called the Marvelous Musical Mississippi Mudcats, but they themselves were from Missouri. That would be the St. Louis Cardinals, 1934 St. Louis Cardinals. Now, they performed in altered player uniforms with the words Mudcats written on the jersey, but still featuring the Cardinal bird art, hashtag branding. Sadly, I could not find any audio of the band, but if any turns up, I'm going to keep looking. We'll put it in the show notes. Pepper Martin biographer Thomas Barthel had this to say. Quote, Martin could be heard yelping at strategic moments as the boys tried to make it through the standards in their repertoire. Said Martin, we play everything. We play anything, whether we know it or not, as well as any instrument anyone gives them, whether they could or not. It was said of the group that it was rare that they finished a tune at the same time. So they're pretty bad. Maybe the first proto-punk band? Play any instrument, start and finish songs at different times? I don't know. The group disbanded in 1936 after Collins was traded to the Cubs, but reunited for a goofy photo during a Cubs-Cardinal game on September 10th, 1938.
Very interesting.
The Mississippi Mudcats, actually from Missouri.
Of course. See, I knew it would be something like
right
that.
Right on the river.
That's why I'm glad I didn't think too hard about Mississippi.
And I'll be honest, right. I thought that the name of the group was Missouri Mudcats until we ended that question. Oh, I was like, man. What the hell? I thought that was going to be a hint, actually, but it would have just thrown you off. So I'll give my own question a B- on that one.
All right, here's your last question. Mm-hmm. Which U.S. capital city in the Deep South region of the U.S. was originally called Lafleur's Bluff?
Capital city in the South region, South United States region, called Lafleur's Bluff?
Yes.
Lafleur. Yet another reference to the hit ABC television series Lost. That was Sawyer's alternate identity that he used when he traveled back in time. Spoiler alert. And started working for the Dharma Initiative. He was Lafleur. And I think what we can get from that is that the showrunners of Lost just loved naming things after real life history and events, as many writers do. But what capital city was named Lafleur's Bluff? Maybe it was St. Louis. Is St. Louis the capital of Missouri? I'm so bad with capitals. This is when I wish we had Jameson back on. Or Kyle. Kyle's good with their capitals, too. It's not Tallahassee. Atlanta. Alabama. See, I'm just going to show my ass here and just guess cities in all these states and guess that they're the capital. Montgomery, Alabama. Mississippi. What's the capital of Mississippi? I have no idea. Jackson. No, it's not Jackson. I really don't know, though. And then Louisiana, that, you know, was a French territory. And of course it has Baton Rouge, New Orleans. Are those the capitals? I don't think either of those are the capitals. I know New Orleans is not the capital. I'm almost certain of that. Almost 99.9% certain. I think Baton Rouge might be the capital. I've never been. Lafleur's Bluff. They don't have bluffs, though, down there. They have bluffs where there's the Appalachian Mountains, which is still the south, but north of those places. I guess Atlanta could have a bluff. I'm going to go with Atlanta. Maybe this is a Stank Mountain type thing. Atlanta. One, because I know that's an actual capital.
I'm sorry, that's incorrect. And another just weird fucking chance.
Oh, yeah?
The correct answer is Jackson, Mississippi.
Oh, no.
Do you have any idea how hard it was to keep a poker face when you sniffed right around Mississippi, talked about the capital,
yep,
Jackson, after the Mississippi Mudcats question, which was actually Missouri?
How fitting. How fitting that we would both fail out here at the end. Of course, we love to highlight our biggest knowers, but sometimes Mark and I are showing ourselves to be the biggest learners here on the No-No.
Yeah. Well, you got one right.
Yep. Wasn't a total loss. That's same as last episode too. There so we're averaging, you know, about 4% success rate or something like that.
Perfect.
Or 10% rather.
Hopefully these people playing along are doing better than us.
Yes. And hopefully you are enjoying the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast as much as we enjoy making it. Thank you for listening, everybody. That concludes this 104th episode of the No-No. Join us every Monday morning for a new episode by subscribing to the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast on your favorite podcast platform. You can support the No-No in several ways, the easiest by sharing this episode on your social media accounts with your friends. You could also leave us a written review on your favorite podcast platform, as we mentioned earlier. And you can support the podcast on Patreon by visiting our website, thenono.com, and clicking the support link at the top, which will take you to our Patreon page, which is rife with bonus content, including bonus quiz number 9, which we just uploaded, an extra half hour of trivia for you, in case you're thirsty for it.
Thank you to our Patreon supporters for helping us out with the show, including our new proverbial lightkeeper, Christopher. Thank you very much, Christopher.
Thank you.
We appreciate you. On this, our 2-year anniversary, it means a lot. Thanks to our quiz daddies, as always, Dylan, Tommy, and Tim. Our team captains, Gil.
It's Gil!
Kristen, Fletcher, Rachel, Aaron, and David Holbrook. David Holbrook. David Holbrook. Thanks to our proverbial lightkeepers, Logan, Spencer, Caitlin, Manu, Mo, Nina, Michael, Matthew, Luke, Marissa, Justin, Hank, Nicole, Cooper, Sean, Carly, Chris, Elise, Josh, and Lucas. And thanks to our Rumble Snailskins, Tiffany, Allison, Paige, Kenya, Jeff, Efren, Steven, Michael C.
Michael Canadian Ice Wine.
Michael S.
Mike Schmier.
And Michael J.
Mike just wants you to support us on Patreon, too. Come on, guys. Do what Mike J says, will ya?
Everybody should, if you know a Michael, you should make them go on our Patreon and become a Rumpelstiltskin so we can just get more and more Michaels with last initials to make it so Lee has to do this forever and ever.
We might have to change the name to the Mike tier if enough Mikes sign up.
Indeed.
Get on the mic. If you'd like to write us with a rate by question or miscorrection, you can do so at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com or call us at 1-929-356-6966. That's 1-929-356-6966. And please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at No Nonsense Trivia and on Twitter at No Non Trivia.
We have a Facebook group you can join as well. Just go on Facebook and search for the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast to join us there. Always amusing anecdotes, people posting information about things that we talked about and got wrong, people posting information about Joey had some information about stuff that she posted relating to the Breaking Bad question that she sent in. So there's a lot of interesting behind the scenes stuff. If you're interested in the podcast, it's a must do. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And finally, as mentioned before, please do not forget to leave us a rating on your favorite podcast service. 5 stars only.
Please. Until next time, No Nonsense listeners, have a great week.